Welcome to IntelliCast. I'm Brian Peterson. Thanks for tuning in. IntelliCast is brought to you by EMI Research Solutions. You can reach out to us by email at intellicast@emi-rs.com or on Twitter at @EMI_research or at IntelliCast1. You can also leave a voicemail or text us at 513-401-5463. We've got a great episode for you today. I am joined by Alex Hunt, the CEO of Behaviorally. Alex and I talk about how he got into market research, how Behaviorally has evolved since he joined 6 years ago, and what some of his personal highlights are. We also talk about AI and its impact on the market research industry today and potentially the future. Finally, I get to know Alex a bit more on a personal level and bring back the four P's. This is a great interview, so why don't we jump right into it?
Joining me now is Alex Hunt, CEO of Behaviorally, the market leader in packaging and point-of-sale data and insights. Alex, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Brian. Really, really happy to be here. So looking forward to our discussion.
Yeah. So jumping right in, you have been in market research for what looked like over 20 years, but what led you to get into market research?
It has been over 20 years, although it doesn't quite feel that way. Like many people, I got into the business by accident. I was wrapping up undergrad, was going to go to law school, but one reason and another wasn't looking as likely, and just applied for a bunch of jobs. Back in the day, it was called the milk round in the UK, where employers would come and look at undergrads for their graduate programs, and long story short, there was a graduate program at Mill Brown at the time, which is now part of Kantar, and I just thought, well, this looks interesting, and applied. And I remember back then it was a sort of 2-day interview process. Mm-hmm. And they sent half the group home after a certain period. And I was quite surprised to be one of the group that was staying. When they separated the two groups, I was pretty sure that we were the group who were leaving, but not the case. And the rest, as they say, is history. But on a serious note, having stumbled into the industry by coincidence and accident, I just really loved everything about it from day one. Got to work on real client commercial issues, loved the commercial process, selling into clients, and the fast pace of life, agency life, and have never really looked back, and it's just a fantastic industry to be a part of.
Yeah, you are right when you say like many fell into it. We are in season 7 and we've had probably close to 70 guests. And I can count on one hand the number of said, I intentionally got into market research.
I always joke, Brian, that I'm suspicious of people who plan to get into market research just because there's so few of them around. And it's a rare thing.
I know. We're seeing it more now with programs at like UGA and Michigan State, things like that. So I think that'll be maybe the next generation will be, yeah, I went to school for market research. But right now it is I went to school for psychology, or yeah, I was doing an accounting degree or anything like that. And then I fell into this.
No, I mean, certainly within our organization, I'm not alone in being people who came into it coincidentally. We've had people who were exploring careers as morticians, as an example, and ended up in market research. So I mean, there's just a widespread of vocations out there where the skill sets and interests must be transferable.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the organization Behaviorally. So you've been with Behaviorally for 6 years now, and how has it evolved over time? I know it spun off from PRS and Vivo, but why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I joined Behaviorally, as it was then, PRS and Vivo, in end of 2018. And it was really an opportunity to join a market leader in the packaging space, but one that really needed to be transformed for the digital age. So over the last six years. You're absolutely correct in that PRS and Viva USA became Behaviorally and carved out as an independent company. So that was certainly one transformation. But that's a minor transformation, I think, in comparison to the complete change in our business model. So we've done three things really over the last 6 years. You know, the first is really productize. You know, we when I arrived, if we had 100 clients, we had 500 different ways of doing things, right? And inherent in that is that we had five different ways of doing things just for each client. You know, it was a very traditional ad hoc market research company.
Yep.
And we've gone through the process of productization, which is really not only essential and I think appropriate for a market leader, but it also allows step number two, right? So having developed a very clear product stack, all applicable right through the packaging development funnel. We've also developed a digital first mindset. So we've digitized that entire product stack. You know, last year, 98% of our business was tech enabled. This year, the budget's 0% for legacy work. And I think that just allows us to bring not only consistency, but faster, cheaper, and better services. In the packaging domain, at least, and wider shopper domain to our clients. And then the third thing, really, because we've productized and we digitized, we've laid the foundation for the really great behavioral data sets, right? There's a lot of companies out there that sit around and talk about behavioral science and behavioral science capabilities. But because we've operationalized that through our productization initiatives and our digitization initiatives, we've embedded that into our data assets. And we're now at a really exciting place where we can begin leveraging those on behalf of clients. So the better, faster, cheaper solutions that we're able to offer today, at least relative to, say, 5-6 years ago when I started with Behaviorally, are going to get even better, even faster, and even cheaper as we unlock the power of that data set in the coming years. So it's been definitely a really, really exciting, really, really exciting time for me, at least. I think for the company and the team as well, but you'd have to ask them for sure.
Yeah, I can hear the excitement in your voice. So yeah, it does sound, and not neither of those two bigger things, the productization or the digitization, are small efforts either. Is there any specific like highlight for you within that, or is it just kind of the overall big three?
I think it's an overall big three. I mean, the real highlight for me is on the change management side, you know, the business transformation. And I think when I joined the business, the business certainly knew what the answers were. The strategy development and the vision articulation is really the easy part, right? Anyone can sit on the sidelines and diagnose the issues, right? I always sort of think there's a lot of consultants out there advising people how to run businesses. And, you know, it's much harder to get onto the pitch and start playing and executing against that. And so really that's been the highlight for me, the change management. And obviously that comes with huge highs and huge lows, right?
Yeah.
Highs is the satisfaction in seeing that transformation take hold, right? You can see at different moments when it's got a piece of momentum going. Either you've won a huge contract with a client, you feel like the commercial engine you put in place is just humming. You can see the value prop really gaining traction in the marketplace. But it also comes with huge disappointments at different times, right? Sometimes a team member who you were hoping was going to stay part of the team decides that the new journey's just not for them. Sometimes, because by definition, you have to be just in front of your clients. Some clients don't want to evolve with your business. And sometimes, and perhaps this is the most frustrating, the team takes its eye off the ball and we don't quite execute to plan. And that's immensely frustrating. So the whole transformation journey has really been the highlight for me. You know, versus one independent strand of the plan and the strategy that we developed and executed against.
Okay. Yeah. No, I know change management. You mentioned that. That is not an easy thing for any organization. That is normally one of the biggest things in managing to that, any sort of change. So you kind of hinted at it a little bit, but what's coming up next for Behaviorally?
Yeah. So for us, I mean, we remain very focused on really supporting our clients to win at the most valuable moment in marketing, right? When a purchase transaction takes place. Ultimately, if somebody doesn't select your product and purchase it, either at the physical or the digital shelf, everything's for naught. So we're immensely privileged to support really famous and leading brands, manufacturers, you know, that all important moment. I think the way we're going to do that is going to change. So, you know, through my career, you asked at the beginning, 20 years, I've seen two big waves of change, right? The first was moving from really traditional data collection methods. And it's staggering to me that there's still some laggards out there using some of these old methods. But, you know, pretty soon, I think most of them will be out of business. But, you know, we moved to a form of online data collection, and that just unlocked potential in the industry. I think the second wave of change was behavioral science. You know, I spent a decade really where the core value prop to the company that we were building was behavioral science. And Behaviorally, you know, you can tell by the name, has been out ahead on that for a long, long time. So we made our methodologies better. Right, online made it more efficient, and behavioral science made them better. And I think the third wave is then about unlocking the power of that combination. Right, we've built much larger, much more efficient, and better data sets. How do we leverage those? And AI really gives the key to that. It marries those two previous waves of change. So, you know, at an industry level, I think we're really at the beginning of a decade of transformation, just like the internet, just like behavioral science. It's not going to happen overnight. I think change is happening quicker today than it did, but regardless, change takes time, especially when you're selling into large corporations that are risk averse with good reason. But change will happen. And I think AI is going to fundamentally shift a lot of how research is done. And the same is true for Behaviorally. So in our world, right, we're in the business of really predicting how people are going to behave at that point of purchase transaction, specifically as it relates to either packaging, and that could be at the physical shelf or the digital shelf. It's going to become much quicker and much more cost effective to get a really accurate prediction of behavior and the sales impact of a piece of packaging. So our core business is going to become much, much, much more tech-enabled and automated than it even is today. But we're also going to see a huge growth in services that are supplemental to that. So just the judgment applied to that marketing decision could be qualitative as well, where we're already seeing a massive uptick in demand. And then I think over the longer term, you know, if we're using our data with AI to predict the impact of packaging, and we're supplementing that, you know, advising clients on how to do it, really there's a question mark around whether or not we should be generating design within the insights industry, or what the insights industry can really contribute to the creation of marketing collateral. And that's obviously that we're looking at within Behaviorally, because we have the world's largest behavioral database, at least as it relates to packaging design. So as we think, you know, just where we allocate resources in terms of manpower, the skills we need in the business, and you know, just the financials we've got at our disposal, that's what we're really thinking about for the longer term.
That sounds great. It sounds like you guys have thought out particularly with the AI portion, because that is all the rage everywhere. Kind of if we're stepping back, talking AI and the overall industry, you're seeing it touch pretty much every facet, not just methodologies, but you're seeing products, you're seeing it being used in-house to just leverage and speed things up. I know I use it internally. It helps me execute some of the more manual things of my job. But then there's also the components looking at, hey, can you turn this into a product? But we've also seen, I don't know if you guys have seen that as well, there are some that are super enthusiastic about it, and while others may be a little more hesitant. And it seems like we're in a bit of a testing phase with a lot of AI tools. Is that what you guys are seeing as well?
I think to some degree we're in testing, but we're also in deployment, right? And, you know, you raise a really interesting point. I was at a conference, I won't say which one, but listening to a panel of leaders. And, you know, there was a lot of apprehension. There was a lot of description of how important it was to really consider the impact of AI on team members, and all very well-intentioned, but I think underestimating ultimately the impact that AI is going to have on the industry, right? And the forces of technology change are just irresistible, right? Resistance is futile. If technology is good at one thing, it's good at relentlessly stripping inefficiency out of different value chains, and that's exactly what it's going to do in data and insights. So you can either get on the train or not, but I think you have to. And the way you know, we look at it, and I certainly look at it, is I think AI has potential through two lenses, right? The first lens is the standard productivity lens, and that's absolutely already in deployment. Mm-hmm. You know, as I look at behaviorally, we do a lot of qualitative, right? AI is helping us summarize qualitative learning in real time. It saved a huge amount of effort on the part of our qualitative team for our Gladys platform. You know, now they can provide summary findings literally as qualitative interviews finish, you know, shelf simulations come to a close. You know, that work used to take days in the past. So huge efficiency gains. And I think, you know, again, because we've productized, you know, in a more survey-based mm-hmm. business, you know, the notion that reporting can be streamlined using AI, I mean, it's spot on.
Right.
Companies are already doing that. We are. But I think the more interesting bit is how does it help us get to just not just faster and cheaper, you know, margin gains, but how does it help us provide better insights, better decision-making intelligence?
Right.
And again, it's already in deployment there. You know, as I look at what we're doing, you know, we published work with Unilever, the digital shelf, right? The digital shelf mm-hmm. was created after traditional insights methods, right? And it operates at a dynamism and a scale that supersedes the capability of traditional insights. So it's only really with AI, which has scaled up assessment of PDP images just in rapid speed, in an automated way, that we can have a solution that's appropriate to measure the impact of packaging or PDP images, product images, at the digital shelf. And that's in deployment. And I think, you know, it's a huge opportunity for the data and insights industry, which is to embrace it. But it's a huge risk if we don't, because someone else will. You know, if we don't, we're not going to be able to play in spaces where consumers are operating, right? And where they're buying things, which is, you know, increasingly online.
Right.
So, I mean, for me, I think, yeah, it's the pilot stage, absolutely. But we need to get over apprehension and just get into execution and quickly. And what I will say about the behaviorally team, it's why I'm so admirable and have such admiration for them, you know, often as a market leader, you slip into a culture where it's tough to innovate, right? You can't disrupt yourself. And, you know, one thing we've proven we can do over the last 6 years is disrupt ourselves, and I absolutely expect us to do it again.
No, that's great. I saw something, and this was probably the early couple months after ChatGPT came out. Someone had, it was a meme, but someone put up about stuff like, gave all these points and you thought they were talking about AI. And then it gets to the end and it goes, we're talking about the Xerox machine. Like, to think about that, it's the same arguments that were used 50 plus years ago in the Xerox machine. Hey, people are going to lose their jobs because it was secretaries and things like that. People rewriting notes like, oh, we're going to lose all that. And no, it made that more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There's always going to be some component of loss because you're on that whole technology bell curve where some of that's going to fall off, but that's going to create other opportunities on the front end. And I think we're going to see that with AI as well. And it sounds like you see that too.
Absolutely. Jobs are going to change.
Right.
There'll be more work around judgment, consultancy on the findings. There'll be also jobs that are created in how to use. But some of the more classical roles in data and insights, project management and design and execution of research, tabulation of results, that will be automated. But that's a positive thing because I think overall, at an industry level, it helps us be much more impactful.
Right. Yeah. And also increases that speed. It really increases the speed and your cost function, your big three: faster, cheaper, better. That's what everybody's looking for. I got one more question for you on this topic. How do you think people can prepare for this impact of AI and its role with organizations that maybe are that on that apprehensive side? What advice would you give them?
Yeah, I think for business leaders, you have to allocate resources to experimentation formally. And I think within the organization, we did an interesting thing behaviorally early last year, where we just challenged every team member to get familiar with tools like ChatGPT and AI, not necessarily in a way related to their business, but feedback, ideas for how that might be able to help them in their day-to-day. And I think that we got some nice ideas out of that, useful mm-hmm. ideas. But the most useful thing was just the level of familiarity that it brought within the business. People were familiar with these tools and it felt a lot less opaque. Under the heading of you've got to start somewhere, it's just a very useful tactic, at least for us, as you said about that journey.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. We've done something similar here at EMI. We've encouraged everyone to do the same thing, learn about the different tools. We've had suggestions on how it will make some people's jobs more effective. Then we're also looking at, how can it internally, we've had suggestions to make it internal processes better, as well as, is there an opportunity here to expand product lines, things like that. So just because that same starting point that you had, we've done the same thing and we're seeing the similar results on that. Like, okay, once everyone gets familiar with it, there's less of that fear or hesitancy. Like, oh, this isn't as scary as I thought.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, Alex, why don't we turn it over to a different stream of questions and get to know you a little more on the personal side. Is that all right?
Yeah, sure. Sounds good.
All right. So for our longtime listeners, they know we do something called the four P's, and it's four questions that we'll ask you to try to learn a little bit more about you. It has been a little while since we've done this, so some of our longtime listeners are going to be kind of happy that this has been brought back. So first P for you is purpose. What has driven you to success? Another way to think of it is, who would you thank in an acceptance speech?
So in terms of purpose, two answers then.
Yep.
Honestly, I've really always enjoyed what I've done. And so I've never really felt like you've worked a day in my life. I mean, of course you have good days and bad days, but sense of purpose is just enjoying what we're doing and being incredibly driven by that. If you want particular people, there's been a ton of people that I've worked with that I've admired over the years. And I've been really, really fortunate to have been mentored by several people, but probably one I would just call out, who gave me a quote that always just sticks with me is Alex Batchelor, who is chief operating officer at Bridgestone when I worked there. And he used to say, we don't hire dicks. And that was, don't be a dick and don't hire dicks was his expression. And it just always stuck with me because it's something that I've always tried to replicate. We try to work well with people and always do the right thing is something we say to the team. And also we're quite particular about who we hire into our business, whether or not we want to work with that person or not.
That's great. Next one is perform. What is something that people don't know about you, or do you have a hidden talent?
Do I have a hidden talent? Yeah. I'm not sure that I do, to be honest. But what would people not know about me? Well, look, I'm a father to a 9-year-old going on to 19. We have a very large dog in the house as well. He's over 100 pounds, so he's a big boy. And we spend most of our weekends in the winter skiing, and we spend a lot of time in the summer at the pool. So that's what people wouldn't know.
Awesome. And like you, I have a 9-year-old also going on 19. At least she thinks so.
I can empathize with some of your struggles, I think, Brian.
Yeah. Next one is play. What's your favorite activity to do in the free time? I think you kind of answered this with your skiing and pool, but is there anything else in that?
No, what I would say though is, and often say it to our team, there's a lot of talk these days about work-life balance, and it may be controversial, but I've never been a huge fan of that. I think it's up to the individual to take responsibility for their own well-being. Sometimes that's about balance. Sometimes it's just about compartmentalization, and there'll be ebbs and flows in any different direction. But what I would say is that, always try to, for me at least, carve out 45 minutes in the morning to exercise, and do that pretty religiously. That's my time, and I tend to try to not compromise on it, unless there's a real, need. That keeps me a little bit busy as well.
That's great. I have that too. I like my exercise time. Got to get that hour. That is a phone on, do not disturb. Hey guys, hey kids, please stay upstairs. Dad's going to work out. He needs a few minutes. Finally, and this one, I think we might retire after this year, is pandemic. Was there something fun or unique you started doing in the pandemic that you are still doing? I'll give you a couple examples that we've had. So for me, we started doing at-home restaurant for our kids, where they would create the menu and we would set up the house like an actual restaurant. I would be the chef. My wife would be the waitress. The kids would come in, sit down, and it would be like they're at a fancy restaurant. Brian Lamar, my former co-host, he started watching marble racing because during the pandemic, he was deprived of sports, and he still does that to this day. So is there anything, something like that?
Well, I can give you an example. I mean, these are great ideas. Maybe we should try some, I can give you an example of something that we did during the pandemic that unfortunately have stopped, which was, at the time my daughter was probably 5 or 6 and she was just learning to ride a bike. And so every evening around 5 o'clock, we'd just sort of stop work for a while, and we'd take a cycle around the neighborhood. Did that, for several months, every night. And, just really was quite a special, nice thing. And, obviously now with life back to normal and travel and not being home every day, that's fallen a little bit by the wayside, but I do think it was a nice activity while it lasted, for sure.
Yeah, no, that's a great one too. I wish I had done that with my daughter and got her bike riding a little earlier than I have. So we would have been able to do that more. Alex, this has been a great conversation. I just want to say thank you for coming on the podcast. How does, if someone wants to reach out to you, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, of course. They can get to me on behaviorally.com, on LinkedIn, or, you know, on X, Alex Hunt 84. And, you know, really appreciate the conversation and thanks for having me. Hope it was useful to the listeners. And yeah, thanks for joining.
No problem. Thank you very much. And for everyone, we will be back in about a week. Thank you.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.